You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Wednesday, November 21st, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to talk about what we've been up to at the water cooler. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Soretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film Managing Editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
Weekend Editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
Senior Writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And Writers Hwai Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
We have a lot to talk about because we're recording this on Wednesday. We usually do it on Monday, so we have 2 extra days of stuff to talk about. So let's just get into it. And it should be said that Jacob is joining us by phone, so his audio does not sound as crisp as it normally does, but he's sitting on the floor in a closet somewhere.
I'm in my childhood home in the closet, just like I was when I was a child.
Well, it sounds fine. So let's get into the stuff. Let's talk about what we've been doing. I will start things off. This past week, I went to a warehouse in Glendale. Basically, Disney has these accelerator spaces that companies that they kind of invest in can have these spaces on the Disney-owned land. And one of them is this company called The Void, which makes these VR experiences. You probably heard Jacob talk about Star Wars Shadows of the Empire on a past version of this podcast. And I think I even talked about it. Their next experience with Disney is Ralph Breaks VR, which is based on Ralph Breaks the Internet. And I went to this accelerator space to basically go inside the internet and experience this new VR experience. Now, I'll give you the quick primer. If you've never experienced VR, you put on a headset and you're in a virtual world. If you haven't experienced VR, you probably aren't interested in experiencing VR. But if you've experienced VR, then you probably are very interested in experiencing VR. A lot of people that have experienced VR have done probably very cheap experiences made, you know, for marketing purposes. The Void is creating these experiences, which they call room scale. So basically, you are walking with a computer strapped on your back through a kind of maze, a labyrinth of like actual physical space. And in the virtual world, all the space that's around you, like if there's a wall, you can touch it. If there's a door, you can open it. If there's a gun, you can fire it. Experiencing the Star Wars one was incredible because it really felt like you were in the world of Star Wars. Ralph Breaks VR basically puts you are brought into the world of the internet by Vanellope and Ralph, and you get to play a bunch of games. One is in a Tron-like setting, but it's kind of like Space Invaders, and the other is set in the world of Pancake Milkshake, but things have gone horribly wrong. This, while the Star Wars version was kind of an experience and a storytelling experience, this is more gamified. So you're given this gun at the beginning of the experience, and the gun can shoot either milkshakes or pancakes, which both have different effects. And during this whole thing, you're gaining points and you're competing against the other people that you are sent into this experience with. And you can actually look at your wrist, and there's on your wrist in the virtual world, there is a watch that has a holographic display that actually shows the point totals for you and your friends. So you're competing against them in these kind of games. The games really aren't from the movie. It doesn't really feel like you're in the movie. Where the Star Wars one felt more photorealistic and felt like you were in a real space, this feels like you are in a video game, which to me is not as exciting. And because it's not as much of a storytelling experience, it's more of a fun game you can play with your friends, which I guess you could makes it more replayable, because you might want to go do it again and see who can get the high score the next time. But to me, I felt like it wasn't as cool as the Star Wars experience. But I will say this, there are some cool things that they are doing. They are learning how to make it so that everybody in this experience is kind of very involved. There's a point where you're led into this room and you stand at these spots that are almost like transporter spots, I guess. And basically, even though you are in a room with three of your other friends in like a small space, the spots now transport you in this virtual world into like different corners of this virtual world. So I can see my friend who is literally right next to me in physical space, but it looks like they are like yards away from me, and we're playing this game together. So it's kind of cool in that way. I would say check it out if it interests you. I'm more excited for what they're going to do with Marvel coming up next. They haven't announced exactly what it is, but we know that they are working on something. I wrote a whole article about this, forward/film.com. I will link it in the show notes. I have a bunch of stuff I did this week. I was actually very busy this week. I spent the weekend at a magic convention in Culver City. That's not that interesting, so I won't talk about it. I also went to DesignerCon, which is, I think, probably my favorite convention right now. DesignerCon has been taking place in Pasadena, in the Pasadena Convention Center. This year, for the first time, it got supersized and was brought to Anaheim, to Anaheim Convention Center. A lot of people were worried that it would lose a little of the charm of the small convention. It's basically, if you've ever been to Comic-Con or any comic convention, this is basically Artist Alley, but as a convention. So the whole convention is basically art and collectibles. You know, it's not, you know, tons of booths selling Funko shit. It's, you know, it's mostly artists selling their wares. And I will say, you know, some of the charm is lost. It is a much bigger space and a lot more artists there, but I bought a ton of stuff, and I just love this convention, and it's one of my favorite conventions every year. And now that it's in Anaheim, that means after it's over, I can go over to Disneyland, and which I did. I'll talk more about that and what we've been eating. So yeah, I guess that was basically my week in a nutshell. Let's move on to Chris. Chris, you have been moonlighting as a spy.
Yes, I usually don't have anything for this section of the water cooler, but this time I actually did stuff. In honor of the Mission Impossible Fallout Blu-ray and digital release, Paramount brought me out to Washington, D.C., and since it was so close, I got to take the train instead of flying, which was fine with me because I'm terrified of flying. And I got to go to the International Spy Museum, which is something I didn't even know existed, but it's been there for years. And you know, they have all sorts of stuff used in real spy craft. There's, you know, listening devices and guns hidden in lipstick tubes, stuff like, you know, really, you know, stuff you usually think of as being in spy movies. They really have it there that was really used. And we got to talk to people from the movie. They weren't the most exciting cast members. One of them was Wolf Blitzer, who, of course, plays himself in the movie, but it's not really him. It's actually, spoiler alert, Simon Pegg wearing a Wolf Blitzer mask. So it was kind of weird to have him be the person for the movie we interview, but he was very professional because he talks for a living, so he knows what to do. And then we got to talk to real life spies, which was very interesting, just talking to these two people who, they don't look like spies. They look like, you know, your grandparents on vacation, but they really were spies at one point for the CIA. And they were very open. They were very interesting. And I honestly got to talk to them for hours. We only had like 5 minutes with them, but the time we got to talk with them was really great. And I wrote this up on slashfilm.com, and there's a great little video as well that Paramount shot for me, and our own Ben pieced together. He did a great job editing all this footage together.
Thanks, Chris. I have one question for you. On the train ride back, did you have to fight off the urge to climb onto the roof of the train as it was moving like Tom Cruise does in the first Mission Impossible movie?
I did. I had the red light, green light gum, and I slammed it on the windshield, and then they threw me off the train.
I just want to add that the coolest revelation for me reading Chris's article, which is very good, is that when he spoke to two spies, they confirmed that Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is, in fact, the most realistic spy movie of all time. So spies is really more about sitting in rooms looking worried than it is about riding on trains. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, I asked them what the least realistic and most realistic was, and unfortunately, they didn't give me the least realistic one, but they both confirmed, as far as they're concerned, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is really the most accurate in terms of spycraft. And that makes sense because the author actually was a spy. He was a spy in British intelligence for a year. So I guess it kind of makes sense as to why that's so accurate.
Yeah, the International Spy Museum is really cool. I've been there once before when I was, it was like on a school field trip back when I was, I think, in elementary school. And I distinctly remember the lipstick gun because I thought that was a very cool device that was several decades old. And I was surprised how they could fit all that in that tiny little container. And I think they had like a simulation of some sort at some point too, where you could, this was like 10, 15 years ago. So
oh,
I don't know if there anymore.
No, I actually forgot. Yeah, there's a, they had us do at the very end, it was like an escape room challenge basically, where we're in like a fictional country and we have to find a missing nuclear device. And it was fun. I, you know, before we did it, the PR people were like, it'll be fun. And they said it in that tone that, like, people say to their kids when they're going to the dentist, like, it'll be fun. And I was like, oh, no. But it really did turn out to be entertaining. And I've never actually done, like, an escape room thing before. So this is, like, a first for me. But it was neat. It was neat. It was over in, like, an hour. It flew by. And, yeah, I had a good time. It was nice to go out there. It wasn't, unlike some other trips I did, it was really not that much of a hassle because D.C. is not that far from Philadelphia. So I got home in like an hour, and it, you know, so it was a good time.
I have to ask you, because you mentioned that the spies you talked to did not look like spies. So I'm wondering, what do you think spies look like? Do you think they look like Tom Cruise,
or
do
I guess
they
just
look like normal people that like are like their whole point is to blend in?
I think it's just because, and this is going to make me sound ageist, but these people were elderly. They're probably like in their 70s. So I mean, you know, I don't picture every spy looking like Tom Cruise, but I guess I had a hard time reconciling them with being spies. But of course, they weren't spies when they were this age. They were spies years ago. Like the guy was telling me when he became a spy, he didn't even know what the CIA was. Like no one knew what it was at the time. So that gives you an idea of how long ago he got into this, because everyone knows the CIA is now. So, but when I sat down with them, I was like, oh, these just look like someone's grandparents. They don't look like people engaging in dangerous missions, but they were at one point.
You know, while we have all been having fun, Brad has been doing raising some money for charity. Brad, what have you been up to?
Indeed, I have. So I'm part of a charity group in my hometown that we formed a few years back. I was doing stand-up comedy with a friend of mine, the guy who I host my podcast with, named Ben. And we decided to start doing stand-up shows in our own hometown. Since I live in a smaller town, there's not like a ton of like activities happening like there are, you know, in big cities where there's comedy shows and concerts and stuff like that all the time. And so we started doing these stand-up shows that we would invite all of our friends and family to, and put them on in this community theater space that seats about 220 people. And we decided to have all of the money for those shows go to charity. And we've been doing them for about 4 years now, I'd say. And we've done, I believe this was our 8th show. And every single one of them has sold out every single time. And all of the proceeds go to a local charity, stuff to support our own hometown, just because we want to do something good, you know, in our area, as opposed to giving it to, you know, some sort of national charity. And so this last time, we put on a comedy show, and we kind of wanted to up the game a little bit. We usually stick with comedians who are more local. They're fairly well known in the areas, for like Chicago comedians, things like that. But this time we decided to do something a little bit bigger, and we got Kyle Kinane to come do our shows this time. We had him at a comedy club that we used to co-run a while back, and so we reached out to him to see if he'd be interested in doing it, since he was already going to be in Chicago for another show. And thankfully, he very kindly agreed. He did 2 shows for us back to back. So I was there, you know, helping run the sound and lights for the show. And so got to, you know, watch him do 2 different sets. And he mixed it up each time, so it wasn't the exact same set over again. And he's one of my favorite stand-up comedians. He's just a fantastic dude, and he's downright hilarious. And so I love doing stuff like this, just because it's, you know, a good thing to do for my town, and I'm just a big stand-up comedy nerd in general. So it was a really fun experience.
Brad, stop trying to make us all look bad. while Chris was at the International Spy Museum, HT was visiting another museum.
Yeah. So I got to visit the Museum of Moving Image, which is the media museum in Astoria, Queens. And it's only about a mile away. I walked there, which was really nice, from my apartment. And there is currently an ongoing the Ballad of Buster Scruggs museum Scruggs exhibit going on there, as well as a Jim Henson exhibit that's been there for a while. And I got to go through both of them. The Jim Henson exhibit was especially cool because it was quite interactive. There was a part where you could sort of play some of the Muppets from the older Jim Henson shows. And they would capture it on screen, and you could sync, like lip sync to one of the songs from one of the talk shows, which was so fun. And there's a great exhibit of like the Muppets, the history of that, as well as some of Jim Henson's later works, such as Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. So I really enjoyed that. I spent like an hour going through that exhibit, and the Buster Scruggs exhibit was surprisingly small. I thought for some reason that it was an entire Coen Brothers exhibit, but it was actually only like highlighting the costumes of Buster Scruggs. So it was like half a room, but it was still really cool. And they were playing clips from the anthology film, which I still have yet to see. I need to watch it on Netflix at some point. So that was really cool. And I hope to go back to the Museum of Moving Image again, because there are always new exhibits going on. And I just had so much fun just kind of playing around. There's also like a video game part of the exhibit that showed some older consoles as well as new consoles. So it's really weird to see a Nintendo Wii next to like an old PlayStation, for example. But you could play with all of them. And Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And oh, there's also like a stop motion animation area as well, which you can make tiny short stop motion animated movies using cutouts. So it was a really fun experience. I highly recommend it for anyone who is a movie buff in any way or who just likes to go to interactive museums. And then I also had another Friendsgiving. So a few weeks ago, I had a Friendsgiving when I was in D.C. It's part of like my going away weekend. And now I had New York edition when I was here, and I had it actually at my new apartment, which I was a little nervous about because my roommate was like, why don't we have it here? But we already had like most of our furniture, and everyone, all our friends kind of came together really quickly to make a fun little potluck. So my roommate and I made like coq au vin, mashed potatoes, and we had some delicious butternut squash and stuffing and everything. So it was a good time.
Wait, so are you having another Thanksgiving tomorrow?
Yeah, at my family's.
So you had three Thanksgivings?
Yes. I mean, what's the point of this holiday if you can't? Well, I just did ab exercises yesterday to like preemptively prepare. And I've been like kind of sore all day because I haven't exercised in a while. So I don't know how much it'll work. But yeah, I'm planning to eat a lot for this holiday because like what's the point of Thanksgiving otherwise? And yeah, I'm only making the salad for my family Thanksgiving, so that's much easier than the other ones.
You know, so I should break into this aside because I'm wondering what everybody is doing tomorrow for Thanksgiving. Jacob, what are you up to on Thanksgiving?
Well, I'm back home in Shirts, Texas, right outside San Antonio, and I'm just trying to survive in a house with 5 dogs, 3 babies, and all my brothers and sisters and their spouses. I mean, it's all a pleasant bunch. It's just very loud. So much barking, so much crying, so many liquids.
Chris, how about you?
My wife and I do a very low-key Thanksgiving where it's literally just us, and I'm fine with that. There's no real hassle. It's just the two of us. We just make a small amount of food, we eat it, we pass out, and then we watch
what
movies.
What kind of food do you make on Thanksgiving? Because you don't eat any meat, right?
Yeah, I basically have all the sides, and that's it.
That is awesome, actually.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, last year I tried a tofurkey, and it tasted terrible, so I learned my lesson. And I said, I'm just going to eat the sides next year, and that's now.
What do you watch during Thanksgiving? You don't watch like sports and stuff, I assume.
Oh God, no, no. I usually try to watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy like every year around this time. So I'll probably break that out, the extended edition, which is 700 hours long.
Ben, what are you doing tomorrow?
I'm going to hang out with you, Peter. We're gonna have a small Friendsgiving, and I think we're just taking it easy. My wife and I are gonna make what we call shakaroni and cheese, which is this recipe that was in like an old edition of USA Today years ago, where Shaquille O'Neal shared the recipe of the mac and cheese that his grandmother and mom used to make him when he was growing up. And we tried it once. It has like a pound of cheese, or more than a pound of cheese in it. And it was amazing. And so every year since then, we have made it for Thanksgiving, and it's been like a highlight of my wife and I's our Thanksgivings over the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 years or something like that. So I'm looking forward to bringing that and seeing how everybody reacts to shakaroni and cheese.
We're going to have to link that in the show notes if you can find the link to that recipe.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, we're having a Friendsgiving over at my place. It's weird. Like, I feel like as I get older, like, it used to be this kind of big thing where a lot of people would come over, but now a lot of my friends are having like kids and families, and I don't know, less people this year, but it's still gonna be fun. And we just like to eat all the things. That's maybe play some games. Yeah. Brad, what are you doing on Thanksgiving?
So I will actually be I'm spending Thanksgiving and the next couple of weeks, actually, in Utah, seeing my girlfriend again. We decided to like double up on the time I spent here because her birthday is also really close to Thanksgiving on December 2nd. So I'm going to be hanging out with a little side of her family. Not as many as we originally thought, because some of them have to work and some of them ended up going to their significant other's families instead. But we're going to have like a nice little meal, and we'll probably end up heading to the movies to see something. And so while I'll be out here, I'm just going to be trying to catch up on a bunch of movies and, probably watching some at home with my girlfriend as well. I personally, as soon as Thanksgiving is over, it's time to break out the Christmas movies. So usually watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and then start rolling in on all the other Christmas movies that, you know, you watch every year, like Elf and Christmas Vacation and all that jazz.
For sure. Okay, let's get back to things and talk about what Jacob has been up to this week.
I flew to Atlanta late last week on a last minute business trip for slashfilm.com. And I signed two NDAs, Peter. I cannot tell you a thing about what I was there to see or how it was the coolest thing I've ever seen on a work-related visit. Sometime mid or late next year, I'll be able to tell you about the most amazing thing I've ever done on a work trip for slashfilm.com, but not yet. Not yet.
Yeah. Ben, what have you been up to?
I had a very low-key weekend. My wife and I just started going through the footage for the Iceland trip that we went on recently, and we're going through the long process of, like, cataloging all of that and trying to start the editing process of, like, cutting together our final video, which is sort of like a living scrapbook kind of thing of a memento from our trip. So we got to look through all of the drone footage that we shot there, and we got some really, really cool stuff. So I'm excited to really dig into that. It's going to take us a long time to get through all this because we're doing an Iceland video, and then separately we're going to do an Ireland video as well. So it's going to be a while, but just the starting that process is like beginning a long battle or something. Like, you know that you're gonna really roll up your sleeves and dig into this thing, so I'm looking forward to pushing through it.
I'm curious about your process here, because like I know how, you know, usually the filmmaking process or documentary filmmaking process works, where you have to go through and like catalog all the footage you saw, kind of like have you know, and maybe even like, you know, flag the good stuff and not flag. Mm-hmm. How does it work with you?
Yeah, so we make three folders. One is called Must, another one is called Good, and the other one is called Hell No or something like that. And basically we open up all of the footage that we have and just drag all of the, watch through every video file that we shot while we were there, and then drag it into those folders. And then once we actually start the editing process, we'll import all of the stuff from the must use folder and try to build out the video from there. But if we need something a little bit extra, then we'll go into the good folder and you know, my wife actually writes down like what every video is of, and she's, I think she said this year that she's actually going to go a step further and make an Excel spreadsheet that has all the information in there, because we have so much footage this year, so it'll be easily searchable if we're like looking for, oh yeah, there, you know, we really need a driving shot here, and then, you know, she can just call up the file name really easily that way. So yeah, it's a whole thing.
how long do you think it's going to take you to make this video?
The thing is, you know, if she didn't have a job and I didn't have a job and we were just sitting down and doing that all day every day, I think it would only take us like, I don't know, a couple weeks to get it to the point where we really love it.
I thought you were going to say a couple days. A couple weeks, well, sounds like a long time.
Yeah, I guess if we were both working like long hours, maybe a week or something, but I don't know. It's a long process, and it's like one of those things where it's sort of a fluid thing. We don't know what it is we want to do yet. We find it as we make it. So, wow, I talked about this for way longer than I thought I was going to. So sorry for anybody who finds this incredibly boring.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm getting interested in all this because I watch a lot of YouTubers who talk about, you know, how they shoot things and stuff like that. So it's, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be, you know, start doing video, what do you call them, vlogs, I guess?
I guess yours
are more like a travel
vlog. It's like a one and done, yeah, like a travel log or something like that.
Yeah, but I'm kind of interested in the whole process. I might try to tackle one at one point, but I don't know. I find it hard when I'm having fun to capture the stuff. Like, I feel like when I do, like, stuff like that, it's like when I have downtime, which is when the, you know, not interesting stuff is happening.
Yeah, it's a whole, like, you have to really be in that mindset when you're doing the thing to remember to get the footage. But it's really cool to have all of it, and then, because then you're sort of like reliving the entire trip, and all the highlights and the best moments are playing out right in front of you. as you're going through the footage again. So it's almost like we get to go on the trip again that way.
Very cool. Okay, let's move on to what we've been watching. I got to see Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. I think I'm the only one on staff at this point who has seen this movie, which is weird. I talked about it previously on the Early Buzz episode. I'll be pretty quick with this, but I love the Wizarding World. I love the charming magic of that. I love the costumes, the production value, the sets, the music. I just don't care about any of these characters, and I don't care about the lineage of these characters from the Harry Potter films. Like, it's just kind of very boring, and the end of this movie has a reveal, and I'm going to keep this as spoiler-free as possible, but it's I feel like it's insulting and angering. My girlfriend Kendra walked out of the movie, and she's a huge Harry Potter fanatic. She's, read all the books, watched all the movies many times. She owns, wands and, prints on her wall. She walked out of the movie saying she wished that these movies didn't exist. So, yeah. So there we have it. It's not a bad movie. It's just unnecessary, and it's kind of if where it goes is kind of insulting, I feel. But what else did I watch? I watched two superhero movies this week. I saw an early screening of Aquaman, and I saw an early screening of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and because of those pesky NDAs, I'm not allowed to talk about either of them or give you my reaction just yet. But I have seen both of them, and you might get some indication of what I thought of them later on in this podcast, even though it's unrelated to my reaction to those movies, because I can't give you a reaction to those movies. I also started watching the second season of American Vandal, and I'm enjoying it. I like how, the first season kind of became like they made it like Netflix canon of like how, it got picked up by Netflix, and these filmmakers kind of like went on a search for like the next season, and they're doing it at this other private school. I don't think I'm loving the dramatic reenactments, which I know is trying to capture that from other, real true crime documentaries. I feel like in this I would much rather it be more like season one, but I'm only a couple episodes in, so I gotta keep on watching, but I am enjoying it. And that is on Netflix. That's American Vandal. Chris, what have you been watching?
I watched the new Shudder series Dead Wax, and I loved it. One of my favorite sub genres in horror involves stories about people hunting down cursed objects, like In the Mouth of Madness or The Ninth Gate, where someone's trying to hunt down a cursed book. And this is like that, but it's someone trying to hunt down a cursed record, and anyone who listens to the record dies or goes insane. And it's really neat. Every episode is only like 10 to 14 minutes long, so it's really easy to breeze through. I finished it in one night. There's like I think eight episodes, and it's really cool. It doesn't take a lot of time to watch. If you have Shudder, which you should, I recommend checking it out. I also saw Creed 2. I actually saw this a little while ago, but I was embargoed. But now that the embargo is up, I can tell you what I thought of it. It's fine. I love the first Creed. I think the first Creed is one of my favorite movies, honestly. It's fantastic. It takes the legacy of the Rocky franchise and turns it into something new and fresh. And this one, you can really tell that Ryan Coogler did not write this one, because it's very unsubtle. It's very on the nose. There are these ringside announcer characters who are so... They're pretty much like narrators, where they're just constantly saying what's happening, where they'll be like, "Can Adonis Creed reclaim his legacy in the ring?" And it's like, stop talking. You're ruining the movie. But beyond that, the actors do a great job. Michael B. Jordan is great. Sylvester Stallone is great. Tessa Thompson has a lot more to do in this one than she did the first one. So their presence alone elevates the movie. And Dolph Lundgren is really good too. He actually has like a bit of an arc. His Ivan Drago isn't just there to be the villain. He actually has some sort of arc, which I was pretty happy with. What else? I watched Mile 22, which is the worst movie of the year. I don't really like to do worst movie lists because I prefer to highlight stuff I love. But if we do a worst movie list, this is my number one. This movie is so terrible that Peter Berg should not be allowed to make movies for at least like 10 years. It's aggressively bad. It's editedly terrible. The acting is bad. The script is awful. I don't know what happened, because Peter Berg has made some okay movies in the past. This is definitely the worst thing he's ever made. And it's not even like worth watching on like a so bad it's good level. It's just awful.
And Chris, when they first announced it, they planned the entire franchise. They talked about how it was a promising start for a whole series of movies. What went wrong?
I don't know. I also remember reading they wanted to have like a VR experience. I don't know who thought this was like a franchise starter, but I think it underperformed at the box office. So thankfully, I don't think we're going to get more of them, and I won't lose any sleep over that. And finally, I watched Netflix's new series, Dogs. I'm a very big dog fan. I prefer dogs to humans. So I was both excited to watch this and apprehensive, because I was really worried it was going to be have stuff where, like, you know, a dog dies or something. And it's
What is this for people who don't know?
So it's like
a bounty hunter show, right?
Yeah. It's about Dog the Bounty Hunter. No, it's a docuseries about dogs. Basically, every episode is about a different dog, and there's different stories. And, you know, one is about service dogs. One is about this guy trying to get his dog out of his home country because he had to flee it. And the dog is trapped there. There's one about this dog who helps his owner fish in Italy. It's all these like really unique slice of life stories. And man, let me tell you, every episode by the end, even though nothing sad happens, by the end of every episode, I'm like a sobbing mess, just because I love dogs so much. And every episode is literally like, by the time it ends, just like, man, aren't dogs great? And I'm just sitting there on the couch sobbing as my wife looks at me like I'm insane. I mean, she loves dogs too, but I get very emotional about this stuff. So if you're a dog fanatic as I am, you should definitely check out Dogs.
Well, very cool. And that's on Netflix?
Yes, it's now streaming on Netflix. I think there's only like 6 episodes, so it shouldn't take too long to watch.
HT, what have you been watching?
So I went to the Metrograph Theater, which Chris mentioned yesterday on the podcast, and I went to see a special screening of Mandy, which I had not had the pleasure to see yet. And it is a wild ride of a film. I definitely expected it to be like a pulpy B-movie gore fest, but I didn't expect it to handle so powerfully this depiction of grief in a crazy, in like a super crazy way, of course. But it's a movie that like really makes use too of Nicolas Cage, the actor, just tapping into his most wild and out like over the top style, as well as like this his more quiet moments. I don't know. It was such an experience to watch, and definitely felt like you were in the perspective of these characters who were tripping on LSD the entire time. So,
but did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. That's what I mean to say. I'm coming down to saying I really enjoyed it. I liked how Nicolas Cage was just this raw nerve of a character. I liked how over the top and bonkers it was. And I actually quite liked, Andrea Riseborough's character, Mandy, too, the titular character, who I anticipated having less of a role than she did. But I liked how prominent she was in this movie. So I will say, yes, I did like it. It was crazy. It was buck wild. I've never been like a huge Nicolas Cage fan. I've been kind of ambivalent towards his style. Most people either really love him or hate him. I will say I'm a big National Treasure fan, but I really liked him in this film, and especially the way that he just so vulnerably portrays grief while, you know, swinging a chainsaw in a big chainsaw fight. So that, it's wild. I loved it.
And how was Metrograph?
Metrograph is cool. It's my first time there. It's definitely a smaller venue. It's not, it didn't really feel like a theater venue in a way because of just how, like, it was almost shaped kind of like, it was like a form almost like a bar as well as like a storefront for like random theater food. But it was really cool. I didn't get to spend much time there because I got there like right before the movie started, but I quite liked it. And it was a very intimate theater setting too, which I liked.
Cool. What else have you been watching?
So I also watched Memories of Murder on Amazon Prime, and that's one of Bong Joon-ho's first films. It's the second film, actually, as a feature director. And I hadn't seen a lot of his – the earliest film I'd seen of him was The Host, and I liked a lot of his films like Snowpiercer and Okja. So I hadn't really seen or heard of Memories of Murder, but it is a great, taut crime thriller that just ricochets between tone of comedies and of suspense so well and so just unpredictably that you don't really know what to make of this film until it comes to like the emotional climax at the end. And it's great. I absolutely loved it. And I highly recommend that you check this out if you're a fan of Bong Joon-ho.
You can watch that on Amazon Prime?
Yes, it's on Amazon Prime. And I've also been watching on Netflix Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I finally got to get a peek of it. I also absolutely love that series. It reminds me a lot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer for many reasons, not because of the kind of character archetypes that we've seen that are very similar to Buffy, but also in its campiness and its almost in its morbidity. I quite like it. And I like that it has kind of has a similar timelessness aspect as Riverdale does, but Riverdale has kind of this more kitchen sink aspect, whereas Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is very much embedded in like the 60s setting of the comic book that it's based on. And I like it a lot. I'm a huge fan so far. I think I'm only like 5 episodes in, but I quite like it. And I love how vampy everyone is too. Michelle Gomez, for example, who plays Madame Satan, is so good and so over the top, as well as Miranda Otto, who just looks fabulous in every scene. So I'm enjoying it so much. The costumes in this show too are just so fabulous and glamorous. And I've also been watching on Netflix She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. I was never a fan of the original She-Ra. It was a little bit before my time, so I didn't really know what to expect going in. But it's from the same creators as Avatar The Last Airbender. And I can definitely see that it echoes a lot of the sort of storyline and narratives of Avatar The Last Airbender in a good way. And although it kind of takes on the more kind of early kiddish aspects of Avatar, but that's not bad either. I love how complex the characters are, especially like all the female characters, which it's mostly driven by, and also gives me Sailor Moon vibes as well in that regard, which I'm liking. So it's, yeah, definitely like cross between some of my favorite animated series and really empowering and a great show, I think, for the demographic that it is. It's a good show in general too. There's an episode in like towards the end of the series that is really great and shows this complex female dynamic that you wouldn't expect to see in a family, like a children's show. I quite liked it. And I think that this is a great get from Netflix.
And She-Ra and the Princesses of Power is on Netflix. That's on Netflix?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Brad, what have you been watching?
I haven't been watching much just because I was so busy finishing my move, which was finally done completely before I came out here to Utah. But I, on the flight over here, I watched Hotel Artemis, something that I missed in theaters. And I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. It's nothing groundbreaking or anything like that, but I really liked the cast. It's a pretty simple story, but I kind of liked the world it created by acknowledging that there's these various chains of, you know, hotels that work to keep criminals like healing them when they're in trouble and keeping them safe, that kind of thing. It definitely has some missteps and that kind of thing, but I think I like the idea of it. And it made me wish that they would take the concept and turn it into a TV series. And it does veer close to obviously having, you know, flares of the Continental and John Wick and whatnot. But this was a little bit, I guess, more, I don't know, audacious as far as, you know, style goes. Not that John Wick isn't stylish, but it's just it's different enough. I think that it works on its own still. So yeah, I think I would love to see them take this and turn it into some kind of series, and maybe show off some of the other, you know, hotels that are used to take care of criminals and that kind of thing. Because I had a good time watching it. Did anybody else like Hotel Artemis?
It sounds like no one else saw it.
Yeah.
Did anyone see it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I never got around to it either.
Yeah,
because it looked like a John Wick knockoff.
It bombed so fast that it was just out of theaters. I didn't get a chance.
Yeah, I don't know. I would love to hear what anybody else thinks about it as far as you guys are concerned, because I enjoyed watching it. Maybe it was just because it was a plane movie, but I had fun with it. And then there wasn't really anything else that I had time to watch that I hadn't seen, because we actually landed like a half an hour early. But so the only thing that I really had time that I chose to watch was The Lion King, because it had been years since I had sat down and watched it in full. And I just love that movie so much. It's one of my all-time favorite Disney movies. I still know pretty much the whole thing by heart because of how much I watched it on VHS when I was a kid. And it's such a tight movie. The songs are so good. The voices are perfectly cast. The characters are perfectly designed to fit those voices. It is pure classic Disney, and I love it so much.
As you're describing this, I'm just imagining, juxtaposing Jon Favreau's live action, you know, quote unquote live action Lion King, and imagining how many of those things could go wrong. Do you know what I mean? You're saying how tight this is, and how what I feel like it's going to be longer. I feel like the character designs aren't going to be to your liking.
It's going to be difficult to capture that same kind of magic in a live action, quote unquote, style for sure. I'm very interested to see how they pull it off.
Well, Jacob, while you've been traveling, did you get to watch anything this week?
Yes, I made the mistake of watching the first half of Channel Zero Season 4 in a dark hotel room alone. Not because Channel Zero is bad. Channel Zero Season 4 is pretty terrific, of the episodes I've seen. But it's some of the scariest shit I've ever seen, Peter. Chris has seen this too, so maybe he can chime in a second. But there's the central villain of Channel Zero Season 4. This is a sci-fi anthology horror series. And Season 4 features a character named Pretzel Jack, who's a contortionist nightmare creature conjured up from a woman's subconscious who murders lots of people in the show. And it is one of the most upsetting villains I've ever seen in horror. And I feel like if this was a movie and not a sci-fi TV show that's consistently underwatched, like, we'd be talking about Pretzel Jack a lot, because he's so scary. Chris, is Pretzel Jack scary, or am I crazy?
He is very scary. He's one of the best recent horror villains I can remember. Like, I agree, if this were a movie, this character would be up there with like the Babadook as far as like new 21st century villains that everyone is talking about. He's a contortionist clown who very violently kills people. This season is shockingly violent, so it's a very good season. This is probably one of my favorite of all the seasons.
Yeah, it's directed by E.L. Katz, who did Cheap Thrills, and I'm really excited to see him continue to work. He's a really fantastic director. Also, I know a few weeks ago I talked about catching up on the Venture Brothers, and I'm all caught up now. I've all caught up on Venture Brothers, and that show is spectacular. I can't believe how well it holds up. I mean, for a show that started out in 2003 and takes 2 to 4 years between seasons, its consistency is remarkable, and its willingness to reinvent itself and stay fresh is just admirable. I mean, the show it is in season 7 is not the show it was in season 1 in almost every possible way. And it just has a willingness to grow and to change and lets characters grow and change in a way that most animated shows do not. And I'm bowled over by it. And the way it's, for a show that started off as a parody of comic books and a parody of old school pulp adventure, it built its own mythology so completely that it no longer needs to be a parody. It's funny just because its characters are funny, and storytelling is so solid that even when it's not funny, you're gripped by the mythology of this crazy world. So even though the first episodes are rough by standards of today and are maybe a bit too Adult Swimmy in their, like, you know, stoner humor. The more modern seasons have grown up in ways that I find just remarkable. This show is maybe my top 10 shows of all time. But also, Nintendo Switch got a YouTube app, and I now watch all of my YouTube on my Nintendo Switch. It is an amazing device. It just got even more amazing. So thank you, YouTube. Thank you, Nintendo. I now have no reason to not take my Switch with me everywhere.
Ben, what have you been watching lately?
I saw Creed 2, which I will just echo Chris's thoughts on that. I pretty much am on the same page with him there, so I'll just move on to Widows, which I saw this week. And everybody seems to love this movie, and I just sort of thought it was okay. That's my hot take. Like, yeah, this movie's fine. I thought the performances were all good, but, like, the writing, I don't know. It's a movie with so much potential because the premise, which is that a bunch of guys who are thieves die during a job, and their widows get together to essentially pull off the job that their husbands couldn't do, is such a cool idea. And I don't know, I felt like there was a little bit of missed potential in this movie. I thought that that Daniel Kaluuya, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce his name, was, you know, he plays about a 180 from his characters in Get Out and even like Black Panther. He's like this menacing henchman to Brian Tyree Henry. He was pretty good in that kind of role. Viola Davis leads the movie, and she's great as always, but it just sort of felt like there's something missing to this film. There are certain moments where characters say things, or I don't know, the structure it falls into place in such a way that it feels like a movie that is far lesser than the rest of the movie. Like, it feels like a top shelf movie for a lot of it, and then there are certain moments where it's just like, oh wow, this feels like a made for TNT movie all of a sudden, the way that people are just like dropping one-liners in that don't quite work, or like openly stating the themes in ways that feel didactic and weird. Or there's one flashback that's just put into the movie at a seemingly random position that sort of tries to get at like the Black Lives Matter movement and like police brutality, but doesn't, it just seems like the laziest way that you could go about doing that. And I'm just like, huh, that kind of stuff feels like it belongs in a worse movie than this. So I don't know. For me, it was just okay. But Chris, I know you've seen this, but has anybody else seen Widows yet?
I have not seen the movie, and I'm not a huge fan of McQueen, but like watching the trailers for this, it just seemed like such a standard. It didn't seem like the elevated stuff that he normally does. Like it seemed kind of blah just from the marketing.
The trailers make it seem like a full-on action movie almost, and it's really not that. But yeah. But Chris, I think you probably like this movie a little bit more than me. What did you think about it?
I loved it. I'm surprised you didn't like it that much. I thought what I loved about it was that it combines like very pulpy stuff with very smart social commentary, in my opinion, at least. Like, it's a very, the trailers are doing it a disservice by selling it as this, you know, heist movie. And, you know, there is a heist in the movie, but the movie has a lot more on its mind. And I just love that all the characters are really well established. Like, even minor characters who would probably get like the short end of the stick in a lesser movie really get fleshed out really well here. I don't know. I really liked it. It's good. It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's worth seeing, and especially because it's a movie that's aimed at adults, and it's kind of one of those movies that we always talk about don't get made very much anymore. So I don't think it's a bad movie. I wish it stayed on that top shelf for the whole time for me when it really didn't. But I would encourage people to go see it because we need movies like that to be supported so Hollywood continues to make films like that. And then on the TV side of things, I started Ozark Season 2, which I'm only 2 episodes into that, so I can't really comment too much, but it's sort of more of the same.
It is a little bit of a change from the first season, no?
A little bit, but I mean, not too much so far. Like I said, I'm only 2 episodes in, so it's sort of like setting the table. There's like a little bit more of a political element to it, where Laura Linney's character used to be she used to work in politics, and she's trying to work the local scene to get a casino approved in season 2. Ozark, it's one of those shows that like the little details are so good, but in terms of like the larger plotting and the larger stuff that happens over, you know, the broad strokes of the season, it kind of feels predictable. It's like the people in the writer's room are really, really smart when it comes to figuring out creative and interesting ways to get out of a corner that they've backed the characters into. But like they need somebody to look at the season in a macro sense and be like, you know, these beats all lead to somewhere interesting instead of just like, oh yeah, you know, this kind of thing is gonna happen next. I don't know, that's kind of vague, but that's my general feeling on Ozark as a whole. I enjoy watching it, but yeah, some of it feels pretty predictable. But and then I'm also rewatching.
I 100% agree with you. There is especially a storyline in season two. I'm not gonna try to spell it out or anything, but I think once it's introduced, like maybe a few episodes in, you're like, oh, I know where this is going. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. All right. Well, now I'm kind of dreading that. But there's only 10 episodes, so maybe there will be enough for me to enjoy along the way. But and then also really quickly, my wife and I started rewatching Community, which is one of our favorite shows. And that show was really good, even from the beginning. A lot of comedies like that, long-running comedies, it sort of takes them a full season to get on their feet and sort of find the tone and find their footing. But I feel like Community, it only took, you know, a couple episodes. And yeah, there's still some room for growth for like characters like Troy, Donald Glover's character in the early season, but or early in the season, I should say. But it's basically like it emerged fully formed, which was sort of surprising. This is the first time I've rewatched the show since it ended. And the jokes are still so good, and the structure is so good. I love all the pop culture references and like the meta storytelling. I mean, it's seems a little played out now, but man, I love that show. So all of that is on Hulu if people want to dive in.
Yeah, that first season was good. I think it escalated in season two. Like they kind of figured out what was working the best, but it was, even season one, I agree, it was very good. Let's move on to what we've been reading. Or actually, where are you rewatching Community?
Community is all on Hulu, and Ozark season two is on Netflix.
Okay. What we've been reading, for some reason, unrelated to if I liked the movie or not, I downloaded and paid for Marvel Unlimited to read the Miles Morales run of Ultimate Spider-Man. And I have read the first 10 issues. I'm really, really enjoying this. I have not, for whatever reason, didn't read it when it, you know, first came about in, what, like 2012-ish. And it's just so good. Brian Bendis it just wrote the hell out of this. Also, I haven't had Marvel Unlimited for a while. For those of you who don't know, Marvel Unlimited is a subscription service you can have on your iPad or your computer, and you can basically have access to almost all of Marvel's past catalog of comics up until 6 months ago. The app is very bad. The UI is bad, and there's like, I don't know, there's some baffling choices here. Like, there's no way for me to add a run of comics to my read list so that, like, you know, I can go through that. I got to keep on looking them up every time. And there's like no way to like follow a series. So like, say you wanted to follow, you know, the Amazing Spider-Man series, and when a new comic comes out, it would alert you. There's no way to do that. I'm assuming Marvel doesn't want people signing up for this and using this as their like main comic book reading. So they don't want people to think, oh, this is the way you can do it. And like, you know, this is more of a way to go back and read past comics, but it's really frustrating from a reader's perspective. But I'm really loving the Miles Morales run of Ultimate Spider-Man, and I would recommend anybody who is excited for Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse to not read the comics before seeing the movie, because I feel like I can't say anything. Okay, but Jacob, what have you been reading?
I just wanted to quickly chime in on the Miles Morales comics. They are great. I want to give a special shout out to artist Sarah Pacelli, who is one of the best actors in Marvel Comics, or in comics in general. The way her characters physically carry themselves in the page, their expressions, their reactions, I'd say she's one of the absolute best, and she is a perfect match for Bendis's dialogue. So like, if you have Marvel Unlimited, you know, the Ultimate Spider-Man run with Miles Morales is as good as Peter is saying. You should definitely check it out.
And there's like conversations, and I don't know. It's just, you would think that this kind of deeper emotional stuff wouldn't be handled in a superhero comic, and I'm just loving it.
Yeah. As for me, I've been reading Blood, Sweat, and Pixels by Jason Schreier. Jason Schreier is a writer at Kotaku.com. He's one of my favorite video game journalists. He very regularly writes big scoops and big stories, and Blood, Sweat, and Pixels is him. Like, it's 10 chapters. Each chapter is dedicated to the making of different video game over the past decade or so. A lot of recent games, a few canceled games, a few games that were masterpieces, a few that weren't. And it's pretty much tries to shed a light on the process of developing a video game. And this is fascinating to me because I've read so many books on film production. I've made movies. I've been on film sets. I know how movies are made. But for as many video games as I've played, I've never understood the process of how you make a video game, how the process works, of how you schedule that, how you staff that, how you make those games come into existence. And I feel like that's the point of this book, is that Schreier is trying to write the first truly definitive look at behind the scenes of why people have to crunch and why video games cost so much and why they fail so often and why when they're successful, it's a miracle in any way. And each chapter may be, 30 pages long. So it's potentially, a series of articles more or less, even though it's a book and a book alone, but it's absolutely fascinating. And even if you're not a video game fan, the stories of how this industry works and how the creative and the technical have to come together to make this happen is absolutely thrilling. I am loving it. I've also picked up George R. R. Martin's Fire and Blood, the book he's been not writing Game of Thrones, book six, Winds of Winter, to write. Fire and Blood is the first of two books chronicling the history of the Targaryen family. Targaryens, as for those of you who watched the show, Game of Thrones, is Daenerys' family, her ancestors, and these books will chronicle how they left their homeland following the Doom, which will hopefully be explained finally. I keep hearing about the Doom for decades and thousands of pages, and how they came to Westeros and conquered it flying dragons. And it's written as an in-universe tome. Like, it's written not as a novel, but as a historical text written by somebody in the universe of Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire who is recounting this legend and this history. So I'm looking forward to digging into that, and once I have, I'll bring back the relevant details for you show fans who won't read the books.
Let's move on to what we've been eating. This week, I am off my diet because I went to Disneyland. I got to finally try these peppermint bark Oreos, and I really like them. They almost taste like those the Girl Scout cookies, the thin mints, but with a more peppermint taste to them. I recommend them. And I also, when I was at Disneyland, I went to Disney California Adventure. Every holiday now has a thing called the Festival of Holidays, where they have booths alongside the pier and that in the Napa Valley area. And basically, they're selling all sorts of drinks and food inspired by the holidays. It's kind of like an extension of like what Epcot did with food and wine and the garden festivals. And it just so much great food. This time, like, usually half of it's kind of like a wash and half of it's great. Everything I had this year was fantastic. Like, to give you an idea, they had a stuffing tamale, which was amazing. They had, I got to try one of the things that's going on for Christmas this year at Disneyland, which is a peppermint churro, which is basically they take a churro, they put some icing on it, they dip it into crushed up peppermint, and then they drizzle some chocolate on it. And it is probably one of the best desserts I've ever had at Disneyland. So if you can get yourself to Disneyland Resort this holiday season and try that peppermint churro, I highly recommend it. And I was eating it in the Redwood Trail area of DCA, walking through there. And I guess this year they installed these snow blowers, like those fake snow blowers, that every half an hour, like, just go off. And I did not know that. So I'm eating this peppermint churro, and all of a sudden it starts snowing, like, in this, like, tree-lined area where, like, usually when you have, like, those fake snow things, like, you can kind of see an area that isn't getting the snow, but because this is kind of like an alleyway, with a tree surrounding you, it looked like it was snowing everywhere. And it was just kind of like one of those magical moments that can only happen at Disney. And So go check out the food at
can you send me one of those churros, Peter?
No, you'll have to come here. You'll have to come here.
Well, that's just not gonna happen.
Brad, while I've been eating a lot of stuff, what have you been eating this week?
Nothing too crazy this week, but I did get my hands on this new holiday seasonal flavor of Mountain Dew. It's called Merry Mashup Mountain Dew. And it's Mountain Dew released a holiday flavor last year that combined both their regular Mountain Dew and their Code Red Mountain Dew into one drink, and it was pretty good. And this year, it's a little bit they decided to do something completely different. So it's not it's a new flavor, and it basically it's cranberry pomegranate flavored soda. Cranberry is like a big holiday seasonal flavor apparently around wintertime, and so I tried it and. It's pretty good. I don't like it as much as I liked last year's mix of the two regular Mountain Dews, but this is it's a pretty solid substitute, I suppose, if they're going to try and do new flavors every year for Mountain Dew.
I usually don't like these Mountain Dew flavors, but and that seems like a weird mix, cranberry and pomegranate.
It's pretty good. It almost tastes like a Mountain Dew version of like that of like a sparkling cranberry juice, I guess. If that makes sense.
I'm out.
Wow. Old. And then just as an aside, I found out that you can at Starbucks, obviously they have seasonal flavors, and I found out that you can get a peppermint mocha at Starbucks, and they also have white chocolate flavors. And I just had the idea the other day, I was like, do they combine those? And so I asked, I was like, can I get a white chocolate peppermint mocha at Starbucks? And they were like, yeah, for sure. And I was like, oh my God, this is a life-changing thing, and it's so good. So if you haven't combined those two flavors at Starbucks, just, you know, treat yourself a little bit.
That sounds fantastic. Jacob, what have you been eating?
Well, I can't talk to you about why I was in Atlanta, but I can tell you what I did after that on both nights. And I don't know Atlanta very well. I went to school in Savannah, Georgia, but I very little Atlanta experience. I went to the hotel concierge and asked for recommendations within walking distance of my hotel. And the first night, she recommended South City Kitchen for a classic Southern fare. So I decided to go all out. I got bourbon to drink. I got fried chicken, mashed potatoes, collard greens, fried green tomatoes, and fried chicken livers. And it was all very good. And I don't know if I ate at a tourist trap or if it's an actual treasure. Please, Atlanteans, write into the show and let me know. Is South City Kitchen actually good, or did I eat at some place the tourists go? and also the next night I went to Lure, L-U-R-E, a seafood restaurant apparently owned by the same collective that owned Cell City Kitchen. And it was very good. I got catfish and chowder, and I enjoyed it a great deal. Once again, Atlanteans, let me know. Did I luck out? Did I get good seafood in Atlanta, or did I just go to the place that everybody goes to and all the locals like roll their eyes at? Let me know. I really actually want to know very much.
I have one thing to add to what I've been eating. There is an institution in West Hollywood called Irv's. They basically serve burgers and fries. They used to be at this stand on Santa Monica Boulevard a few years back. They raised the rent and they had them move to a new location. And they've been around for decades. Seth Rogen has tweeted about them many times. A lot of celebrities. Like, if you go there, they have, like, photos up of all these people that have eaten there. And the person who serves you, like, will draw, like, a caricature of – or not a caricature. Like, almost like a small little drawing of your face on, like, the paper plate. It's very cute. It's a great place. And it was revealed this week that they're closing for good. So this week is the last week you can get Irv's in West Hollywood before it goes away for good. So I got to head down there. I had lunch with Larry Fong, the cinematographer, and had a burger and fries for the last time at Irv's. So, Ben, have you ever been to Irv's?
I have not. Man, I'm bummed that I'm probably going to miss out on this.
You might want to check it out this week. I guess probably Friday or Saturday might be your last chance. Although it is kind of just your typical burger and fries. It's not like there's anything like that special about the food. It's more of the people that run the business. It's just kind of a cool thing. But anyways, let's move on to what we've been playing. Brad, what have you been playing?
So I haven't been playing any video games lately, but since we sometimes like to interject music stuff into this section, I will say that I have been listening to The Greatest Showman Reimagined quite a bit, which is the soundtrack from The Greatest Showman remade by a bunch of chart-topping artists like Kelly Clarkson and Pink and Panic at the Disco and Pentatonix. And the music is easily the best part of The Greatest Showman because the movie otherwise is kind of a train wreck. But the soundtrack is fantastic. The songs are incredible. And all the covers that they did for this remake of the soundtrack are awesome. Kelly Clarkson's version of Never Enough specifically is a standout. Panic at the Disco, regardless of what you think of them, they're kind of the perfect band to do a cover of The Greatest Show. And it's just, it's a great collection of artists that they got to do the soundtrack. Jacob, you've been listening to this a lot too, right?
Yeah, I've been listening to it pretty much nonstop for the past few days. And like you said, I think that The Greatest Showman as a movie is a bullshit factory. It kind of makes me angry. But the musical numbers and the songs are awesome. And I listen to the soundtrack all the time. And so this one has been a nice break from the original, from the basic soundtrack. And I think you're right. The Kelly Clarkson cover is the only song that I think is flat out 1,000 times better than the original. It is so good. The rest of the songs are good. They're all really good covers, ranging from good to great. I don't think I like it as much as the basics, as the original soundtrack, but it is definitely really fun. If you really already like the soundtrack to the movie, this is really worth listening to because those songs are so good. They're gonna outlive the movie by years. They're so good.
What else have you been playing, Jacob?
I finally started playing Diablo 3 on the Nintendo Switch. For those of you who don't know, Diablo 3 is a game, the third game in the Diablo series from Blizzard Entertainment. Blizzard, you know, makes Overwatch, World of Warcraft, Warcraft, Starcraft. They're a big company. They're very popular, very strong following. And Diablo 3 is a dungeon crawler where you go through dungeons. It's like, you know, a warrior or a mage or all the classic fantasy tropes. You fight demons. You collect loot. And ultimately, it's a game of making the numbers get bigger. You want to find, you want to level up so you can make your numbers bigger. You want to find better equipment to make your numbers get bigger. You want to kill lots of demons so your numbers get bigger. So even though there is a story and there is lore and there is other stuff going on, it's ultimately a game about how big can I make my numbers. And this is a really great way to spend a flight or to spend time in the airport. Or if you've been sick for the past few days like I have and need something completely mindless but really fun and addictive, it's just a really fun way to watch numbers get bigger. That's Diablo 3 on Nintendo Switch. If you played it before on PC or PS4 or any other systems it's been on over the past 6 years, this is the exact same game with all the DLC and expansion stuff added in. But being able to take it on the go and add friends come over and even just play it on our own Switch, having our own screen so we could journey together and make our numbers get bigger together. It was so much fun. And if you already like Diablo 3, it's probably worth rebuying. And if you haven't played it before but like the idea of a really great casual social game, it's also challenging and has just enough depth alongside being about something as simple as making your numbers get bigger, it's really fun. Since I'm home with my family for Thanksgiving, they're big board game fanatics. I always bring home a giant bag of board games. So you'll be hearing about more new games hopefully next week. We played some old favorites, but we played a new game called Someone Has Died. It's a comedy improv card game where one person is the arbitrator of a will. They have to make up somebody who's died, say like who they were, what they did, how much money they have. And everybody else has to draw a series of cards that tells them who they are. Like, you are a sentient robot who wants to feel love and gives you a relationship. Like, you were the deceased's college roommate. And give you some other background details, like random things that you have to incorporate into your character. Over a series of rounds, you have to pitch your character. You have to essentially play your character and try to pitch the arbitrator on why you deserve the money. And there are other cards that, like, change things up. They can, like, flip the table around. You have to keep adding more and more details to your character. And it's very funny. Like, if you play with the right group who's, like, willing to be silly and improvise and really get into it, it's a very, very fun game. I had a great time with it.
And that's called Someone Has Died?
Yes, it was a Kickstarter game, but it is now available at stores.
Very cool. Ben, finally, what have you been playing?
I started playing The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I've been sort of wanting to do for a long time, and I finally buckled down and got that game, and it's pretty fun. It's been a long time since I've played a game that gives you this much freedom, and I think Jacob's talked about this in terms of Red Dead Redemption 2 as well, and you've also brought up Breath of the Wild too, but it's one of those things where, like, the world is so huge and so open, and you are really not pointed in you're not forced in any given direction. And you know, this is different than, it feels different to me anyway, than other open world games, because even in games like Grand Theft Auto and that series, it feels like there's always a thing that you kind of know you're supposed to really be doing, and you can, you know, dick around and go off and do other things at your own pace and just mess around if you want to, but you kind of feel like there's a thing that you should be doing. And this, it feels like there's like 10 things you could be doing, but just go, like, wander around and see what's happening out there. It's like kind of a freeing experience. Jacob, do you know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. There's a Ubisoft. They're a good company, but they have so many open world games, like the Assassin's Creed games and the Far Cry games, where they have this massive open world, and they populate it with dozens and dozens of icons, saying, "Look at all these things you can do. Here are dozens of icons to the north, south, east, west. Go find these things. You hear these things, you can go to these spots and do things." Whereas Zelda is like, no icons. If you want to see where you want to go, climb that mountain, go climb that tower, and then open up your menu and place your own icons on things you think look interesting and go take a look for yourself. It is freeing. It is freeing in a way that I did not know I would enjoy this much.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, there's this threat of, if Ganon is like circling this castle, and you just, other games would make it feel like, would make you feel like you have to rush through all this stuff because there's a ticking clock element, but it just seems like, yeah, he's over there. You know, he's just sort of spinning around that castle. Things will probably be fine if you just take your time. Like, it's a weird kind of concept in, an adventure story that ostensibly is supposed to be a life and death thing for, like, an entire kingdom. But it really just seems like Ganon is fine just waiting on you to arrive before, like, a final battle is initiated or something, and you can just sort of do everything at your own pace. It's kind of cool.
That's one of the things I love about this game, is that it's the only Zelda game where the opening revelation, the first hour of the game, you learn that Link lost. Like, a century ago, Hyrule fell to Ganon, all the heroes died, and Link's been resurrected. And you're essentially wandering around the post-apocalypse. Everyone who's still alive, like, is like doesn't have memories of 100 years ago, pretty much, and so the threat is always looming because Ganon is still alive, but there's no rush because you already lost. It's just you trying to save the day and make atone for having screwed up earlier, and lends the game this very melancholy sense of, well, this time I'm going to do it right, so I'll take my sweet time.
Yeah, and the melancholy thing is interesting too. Extend this conversation any further, but just like the music too, like, as you're walking through these grassy fields, it just sort of, the music really paints that melancholic picture as well. Like, you really get the sense of, like, you're this guy who doesn't really remember about what's happened to him, and it's a desolate game in a lot of ways. There's not that many people that you encounter, and you can spend long stretches of it just, you know, traversing huge expanses of land at your own pace. It's a really interesting thing. So I've probably played for, I don't know, 7 hours or 10 hours or something like that. And I feel like I barely scratched the surface. So I have no idea how long it's going to take to get through this thing. But unlike other games, I feel no rush in doing so.
Very cool. And that's The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, available for the Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
And yes, so that brings us to the end of today's episode of Slash Film Daily. This is going to be the last episode for this week because we're taking tomorrow off for Thanksgiving and Friday off as well. Although SlashFilm.com will have you updated with news throughout that time. So if you're looking for some content, go onto the website. And if there's any late breaking news, hopefully we'll get it up. We'll take a break from the turkey dinner. And get some of that content up. But yeah, you can find all of us at slashfilm.com. You can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please feel free to send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to peter@slashfilm.com. And please go to our iTunes page. Give us a 5-star review. Write us a little blurb. Tell your friends. Spread the word. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, Peter, do you know what time it is?
I thought because you were at your relative's house that you didn't have your book.
I don't have my book, but you know, it's Thanksgiving, which means that it's not a time for insults. It's not a time for being mean to each other. It's not a time for telling those horrible truths about my slash film squad mates. It's time.
What is it time for?
It's time to come together with the world's funniest jokes about Thanksgiving. So I have some very, 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 very funny Thanksgiving jokes for each one of you.
Where are you getting these from?
From the funniest website in the world.
Okay.
Hey, Peter.
Yeah.
Why did the farmer run a steamroller over his potato field on Thanksgiving Day?
To make mashed potatoes?
He wanted to raise mashed potatoes. It's very funny.
Are you sure this is the world's funniest website?
Hey, HT, why did the turkey cross the road?
Why?
It was Thanksgiving Day, and he wanted people to think he was a chicken. Hey, Chris, what is a turkey's favorite dessert?
I don't know.
Peach gobbler.
Oh, I did know that, actually.
That's a good one, actually.
Hey, Ben, why did the cranberries turn red?
I don't know.
Because they saw the turkey dressing.
Oh my God.
That one's good, too. Let's just do Thanksgiving jokes.
I love these last two ones.
And finally, save the best for last. Brad, what did the turkey say to the computer?
Brad's muted, so I'll assume that he doesn't
Brad
know.
Brad was so shocked by this joke that he went mute.
I had no idea. I have no idea.
What did the turkey say to the computer? The turkey says, Google, Google, Google.
That's horrible.
If you want more of these hilarious jokes, you can go to www.boyslife.org.
Oh, boy.
Okay. not to get sentimental, but it is Thanksgiving, so I want to thank everybody who's listening. We really appreciate it, and I want to thank the entire staff who every day does a great job on slashfilm.com and on this podcast. You guys have been kicking butt lately. But everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Happy Thanksgiving, cool. Everyone.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Have a good one.
Eat lots of food. Eat it, as Ben said.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.